Chapter 18. News for the Dragon.
"Enough, Loyal," Rand said firmly, thumbing tobacco into his short-stemmed pipe from a goatskin pouch. It was Tyrant leaf, with a slightly oily taste from the curing, but that was all that was to be had. Thunder rolled overhead, slow and ponderous.
"You'll talk me hoarse with all these questions."
They were seated at a long table in one of the larger rooms in Lord Algaron's manor house, the remains of the midday meal pushed down to one end. The servants were old, for the most part, and slower moving than ever since Algaron left for the Black Tower. The rain pouring down outside seemed to be slackening, though strong gusts of wind still pelted the windows with raindrops hard enough to rattle the glass in the 6 yellow-painted casements. Many of those panes held bubbles. Some distorted what lay outside almost beyond recognition. The table and chairs were simply carved, no more elaborate than might be found in many farmhouses, and the yellow cornices beneath the high-beamed ceiling little more so. The two fireplaces, at either end of the room, were broad and tall but of plain stone, the andirons and fire tools sturdy wrought iron and simple. Lord or no, Algaron was far from wealthy. Tucking the tobacco pouch into his pocket, Rand strolled to one of the fireplaces and used small brass tongs from the mantel to lift a burning sliver of oak for lighting his pipe. He hoped no one thought that strange. He avoided channeling any more than absolutely necessary, especially if anyone else was present. The dizziness that hit him when he did was difficult to conceal. But no one had mentioned it so far. A gust of wind brought a squeaking as though tree branches had scraped across the window panes. Imagination. The nearest trees were beyond the fields, more than half a mile away. Loyal had brought down a vine-carved chair from the Ogier rooms that put his knees level with the tabletop, so he had to lean forward sharply to write in his leather-bound notebook. The volume was small for him, little enough to fit neatly into one of his capacious coat pockets, but still as large as most human books Rand had seen. Fine hair decorated Loyal's upper lip, and a patch beneath his chin. He was attempting a beard and mustaches, though with only a few weeks' growth it did not seem a very successful attempt so far.
"But you've told me almost nothing really useful," the Ogier rumbled,
a drum booming its disappointment. His tufted ears drooped. Even so, he began wiping the steel nib of his polished wooden pen. Fatter than Rand's thumb, and long enough to seem slender, it fitted Loyal's thick fingers perfectly.
"You never mention heroics, except by somebody else. You make it all sound so every day. To hear you tell it, the fall of Ilion was as exciting as watching a weaver repair her loom. And cleansing the true source? You and Nynaeve linked? Then you sat and channeled while everybody else was off fighting Forsaken. Even Nynaeve told me more than that, and she claims to remember almost nothing."
Nynaeve, wearing all of her jeweled Tirangrial and her strange bracelet and rings Angrial, shifted in her chair in front of the other fireplace, then went back to watching Olivia. Every so often she glanced toward the windows and tugged at her thick braid, but for the most part she focused on the yellow-haired Seanchan woman. Standing beside the doorway like a guard, Olivia gave a small, brief smile of amusement. The former Damani knew Nynaeve's display was meant for her. The intensity never left her hawkish blue eyes, though. It seldom had, ever since her collar had been removed in Camelon. The two maidens squatting on their heels near her playing cat's cradle, Harlan of the Iron Mountain Tardad, and Anila of the Jarachareen, were making their own display. Shufa wrapped around their heads and black veils hanging down their chests, each had 3 or 4 spears stuck through the harness, holding her bowcase on her back, and a bullhide buckler lying on the floor. There were 50 maidens in the manor house, several of them Shido, and they all went about ready to dance the spears in a heartbeat. Perhaps with him. They seemed torn between delight at providing a guard for him again and displeasure over how long he had avoided them. As for himself, he could not look at any of them without the litany of women who had died for him, women he had killed, starting up in his head. Moraine Damodred, her above all.
Her name was written inside his skull in fire. Leia of the Corsaida Charin. Sandara of the Iron Mountain Tardad. Lamella of the Smokewater Miagoma. Andalin of the Red Salt Goshin. Desora of the Musara Rain. So many names. Sometimes he woke in the middle of the night muttering that list, with Min holding him and murmuring to him as if soothing a child. He always told her he was all right and wanted to go back to sleep, yet after he closed his eyes he did not sleep until the list had been completed. Sometimes Luz Theron chanted it with him. Min looked up from the volume she had open on the table, one of Herod Fell's books. She devoured those, and used the note he had sent Rand before his murder, the one where he said she was a distraction because she was so pretty, as a bookmark. Her short blue coat, embroidered with white flowers on the sleeves and lapels, was cut to fit snugly over her bosom, where her creamy silk blouse showed a touch of cleavage, and her big dark eyes, framed by dark ringlets to her shoulders, held a pleased light. He could feel her pleasure through the bond. She liked him looking at her. Without a doubt, the bond told her how much he liked looking. Oddly enough, it said she liked looking at him, too. Pretty? He hummed, thumbing his earlobe. She was beautiful, and tied to him tighter than ever. She and Elaine and Avienda. How was he to keep them safe now? He forced himself to smile back at her around his pipe stem, unsure how well the deception was working. A touch of irritation had entered the bond from her end, though why she should become irritable whenever she thought he was worrying about her was beyond him. Light, she wanted to protect him. "Rand isn't very talkative, Loyal," she said, no longer smiling. Her low, almost musical voice held no anger, but the bond told another story. "In fact, sometimes he's about as talkative as a muscle." The look she directed at Rand made him sigh. It seemed there would be a great deal of talking once they were alone together. "I can't tell you much myself, but I'm sure Cad Swain and Varen will tell you anything you want to know. Others will, too. Ask them if you want more than yes and no and two words besides." Stout little Varen, knitting in a chair beside Nynaeve, appeared startled to hear her name mentioned. She blinked vaguely, as though wondering why it had been. Cadswain, at the far end of the table, with her sewing basket open beside her, only took her attention away from her embroidery hoop long enough to glance at Loyal. Golden ornaments swayed, dangling from the iron-gray bun atop her head. It was only that, a glance, not a frown, yet Loyal's ears twitched. Aes Sedai always impressed him, and Cadswain, more than any other.
"Oh, I will, Min, I will," he said. "But Rand is central to my book."
With no sand jar at hand, he began blowing gently on the page of his notebook to dry the ink. But Loyal being Loyal, he still talked between puffs.
"You never give enough detail, Rand. You make me drag everything out of you. Why, you never even mentioned being imprisoned in Far Madding until Min did. Never mentioned it. What did the Council of Nine say when they offered you the Laurel Crown? And when you renamed it? I can't think they liked that. What was the coronation like? Was there feasting, a festival, parades? How many Forsaken came against you at Shadar Logoth? Which ones? What did it look like at the end? What did it feel like? My book won't be very good without the details. I hope Matt and Perrin give me better answers."
He frowned, long eyebrows grazing his cheeks.
"I hope they're all right."
Colors spun in Rand's head, twin rainbows swirled in water. He knew how to suppress them now, but this time he did not try. One resolved into a brief image of Matt riding through forest at the head of a line of mounted folk. He seemed to be arguing with a small dark woman who rode beside him, taking his hat off and peering into it, then cramming it back onto his head. That lasted only moments, then was replaced by Perrin, sitting over wine cups in a common room or tavern with a man and a woman who wore identical red coats ornately trimmed with blue and yellow. Odd garments. Perrin looked grim as death, his companions wary. Of him?
"They're well," he said, calmly ignoring a piercing look from Cadswain.
She did not know everything, and he intended to keep it that way. Calm on the surface, content, blowing smoke rings. Inside was another matter.
"Where are they?" he thought angrily, pushing down another appearance of the colors.
That was as easy as breathing now.
"I need them, and they're off for a day at the Anseline Gardens."
Abruptly another image was floating in his head, a man's face, and his breath caught. For the first time it came without any dizziness. For the first time he could see it clearly in the moments before it vanished. A blue-eyed man with a square chin, perhaps a few years older than himself. Or rather, he saw it clearly for the first time in a long while. It was the face of the stranger who had saved his life in Shadaloguth when he fought Samael. Worse.
"He was aware of me," Luce Theron said.
He sounded sane for a change. Sometimes he did, but the madness always returned eventually.
"How can a face appearing in my mind be aware of me?"
"If you don't know, how do you expect me to?" Rand thought. "But I was aware of him as well."
It had been a strange sensation, as if he were touching the other man somehow, only not physically. A residue hung on. It seemed he only had to move a hair's breadth in any direction to touch him again.
"I think he saw my face, too."
Talking to a voice in his head no longer seemed peculiar. In truth, it had not for quite a long time. And now? Now he could see Matt and Perrin by thinking of them or hearing their names, and he had this other face coming to him unbidden. More than a face, apparently. What was holding conversations inside his own skull alongside that? But the man had been aware, and Rand of him. "When our streams of balefire touched in Shadaloguth, it must have created some sort of link between us. I can't think of any other explanation. That was the only time we ever met. He was using their so-called true power. It had to be that. I felt nothing, saw nothing, except his stream of balefire."
Having bits of knowledge seem his when he knew they came from Luce Theron no longer seemed odd either.
He could remember the Anseline Gardens, destroyed in the War of the Shadow, as well as he did his father's farm. Knowledge drifted the other way, too. Luce Theron sometimes spoke of Emmons Field as if he had grown up there.
"Does that make any sense to you?"
"Oh, Light, why do I have this voice in my head?" Luce Theron moaned. "Why can I not die? Oh, Ilyena, my precious Ilyena, I want to join you."
He trailed off into weeping. He often did when he spoke of the wife he had murdered in his madness. It did not matter. Rand suppressed the sound of the man crying, pushed it down to a faint noise on the edge of hearing. He was certain that he was right. But who was the fellow? A dark friend, for sure, but not one of the Forsaken. Luce Theron knew their faces as well as he knew his own, and now Rand did too. A sudden thought made him grimace. How aware of him was the other man? Tavirin could be found by their effect on the pattern, though only the Forsaken knew how. Luce Theron certainly had never mentioned knowing. Their conversations were always brief, and the man seldom gave information willingly. And nothing had drifted across from him on the subject. At least Lanfear and Ishamael had known how, but no one had found him that way since they had died. Could this link be used in the same fashion? They could all be in danger, more danger than usual, as if the usual were not enough.
"Are you well, Rand?"
Loyal asked worriedly, screwing the leaf-engraved silver cap onto his ink jar. The glass of that was so thick it could have survived anything short of being hurled against stone, but Loyal handled it as though it were fragile. In his huge hands it looked fragile.
"I thought the cheese tasted off, but you ate a good bit of it."
"I'm fine," Rand said, but of course Nynaeve paid him no heed. She was out of her chair and gliding down the room in a flash, blue skirts swirling.
Goosebumps popped out on his skin as she embraced Sayadar, and stretched to lay her hands on his head. An instant later, a chill rippled through him. The woman never asked. Sometimes she behaved as if she were still the wisdom in Emmons Field, and he would be heading back to the farm come morning.
"You're not ill," she said in tones of relief. Spoiled food was causing all sorts of sickness among the servants, some of it serious. People would have died except for the presence of Ashaman and Aes Sedai to give healing.
Reluctant to cost their lord scarce money by throwing food out, despite all the admonitions Cad Swain and Nynaeve and the other Aes Sedai gave them, they fed themselves things that should have been tossed on the midden heap. A different tingling centered briefly around the double wound in his left side.
"That wound is no better," she said with a frown.
She had tried healing it, succeeding no better than Flynn had. That did not sit well with her. Nynaeve took failure as a personal insult.
"How can you even stand up? You must be in agony."
"He ignores it," Min said flatly.
Oh yes, there would be words.
"It hurts no worse standing than sitting," he told Nynaeve, gently taking her hands from his head.
Simple truth. So was what Min had said. He could not afford to let pain make him a prisoner. One of the twinned doors creaked open to admit a white-haired man in a worn yellow coat trimmed with red and blue that hung loosely on his bony frame. His bow was halting, a fault of his joints rather than disrespect.
"My lord dragon,"
he said in a voice nearly as creaky as the hinges,
"Lord Loghain has returned."
Loghain did not wait on invitations, entering practically on the serving man's heels. A tall man with dark hair curling to his shoulders and dark for a Gildanin, women likely thought him handsome. Yet there was a streak of darkness inside him as well. He wore his black coat with the sword and the dragon on the high collar and a long-hilted sword on his hip. But he had made an addition, a round enameled pin on his shoulder showing three golden crowns in a field of blue. Had the man adopted a sigil? The old man's hairy eyebrows shot up in surprise, and he looked to Rand as if inquiring whether he wanted Loghain removed.
"The news from Andor is fair enough, I suppose," Loghain said, tucking black gauntlets behind his sword belt.
He offered Rand a minimal bow, the slightest bending of his back.
"Elaine still holds Camelin, and Aramilla still holds her siege. But Elaine has the advantage, since Aramilla can't even stop food getting in, much less reinforcements. No need to scowl. I kept out of the city. Blackcoats aren't exactly welcome there in any case. The Borderlanders are still in the same place. You were wise to stay clear of them, it seems. Rumor says there are 13 Aes Sedai with them. Rumor says they're looking for you. Has Bashir gotten back yet?"
Nynaeve gave him a scowl and moved away from Rand, gripping her braid tightly. Aes Sedai bonding Ashaman was all very well in her book, but not the reverse. 13, and looking for him? He had stayed clear of the Borderlanders because Elaine did not welcome his help. Interference, she called it, and he had begun to see that she had the right of it. The Lion Throne was hers to gain, not his to give. But perhaps it was as well that he had. The Borderland rulers all had ties to the White Tower, and no doubt Elida was still eager to get her hands on him. Her and that mad proclamation about no one approaching him except through her. If she believed that would force him to come to her, she was a fool.
"Thank you. That will be all, Ethan." "Lord Loghain?" he asked as the serving man bowed himself out with a last disgruntled glance at Loghain.
Rand thought the man would have tried had he told him to haul Loghain out.
"The title is his by birth,"
Cad Swain said without looking up from her embroidery. She would know. She had helped capture him back when he was calling himself the Dragon Reborn. He and Taim both. Her hair ornaments bobbed as she nodded to herself.
"Pah! A minor lordling with a scrap of land in the mountains, most of it all but straight up and down. But King Johannan and the Crown High Council stripped him of his lands and title after he became a false dragon."
Small spots of color appeared in Loghain's cheeks, yet his voice was cool and composed.
"They could take my estate, but they could not take away who I am."
Still seemingly intent on her embroidery needle, Cadswain laughed softly. Varen's knitting needles had stopped. She was studying Loghain, a plump sparrow, studying an insect. Olivia had shifted her intense gaze to the man, too, and Harlan and Anila seemed to be just going through the motions of their game. Min appeared to be reading still, but each hand rested near the opposite cuff of her coat sleeves. She kept some of her knives hidden there. None of them trusted him. Rand frowned. The man could call himself whatever he wanted, so long as he did what he was supposed to. But Cadswain prodded him and anyone else in the black coat nearly as much as she did Rand himself. He was unsure how far to trust Loghain either, yet he had to work with the tools he had to hand. Is it done? With Loghain here, Loyal was uncapping his ink jar again. More than half the Black Tower is in Arad Daman and Ilion. I sent all the men with bonded Aes Sedai except those here, as you ordered. Loghain walked to the table while he talked, found a blue-glazed pitcher that still held wine among the plates and scraps, and filled the green-glazed cup. There was very little silver in the house. You should have let me bring more men here. The numbers tilt too much to Aes Sedai for my liking. Rand grunted. Since part of that is your doing, you can live with it. Others will have to as well. Go on. Dobrain and Ruark will send a soldier with a message as soon as they find anyone in charge of more than a village. The Council of Merchants claim King Al-Salam still reigns, but they wouldn't or couldn't produce him or say where he is. They seem to be at one another's throats themselves. And Bandar Ebon is more than half deserted and given over to the mob. Loghain grimaced into his wine cup. Gangs of strong arms provide what little order there is, and they extort food and coin from the people they claim to protect and take whatever else they want, including women. The bond suddenly held white-hot rage, and Nynaeve growled in her throat. Ruark has set about putting an end to that, but it was already turning into a battle when I left, Loghain finished. Strong arms won't hold out long against Aiel. If Dobrain can't find anyone in charge, then he will have to be for the time being. If Al-Salam was dead, as seemed likely, he would have to appoint a steward for the Lord Dragon in Arad Daman. But who? It would have to be someone the Damani would accept. The other man took a long swallow of wine. Taim wasn't pleased at me taking so many men out of the tower and not telling him where they were going. I thought he was going to rip up your order. He tried every trick to learn where you are. Oh, he burns to know that. His eyes were practically on fire. I wouldn't put it past him to have put me to the question if I'd been fool enough to meet him without company. One thing pleased him, though, that I didn't take any of his cronies. That was plain on his face. He smiled, a dark smile, not amused. There are 41 of those now, by the way. He's given over 12 men the dragon pin in the past few days, and he has above 50 more in his special classes, most of them men recruited just lately. He's planning something, and I doubt you'll like it.
I told you to kill him when you had the chance,
Luthern cackled in mad mirth.
I told you, and now it's too late, too late.
Rand angrily expelled a stream of blue-gray smoke. Give over, he said, meaning it for both Loghain and Luthern. Taim built the Black Tower till it nearly matches the White Tower for numbers, and it grows every day. If he's a dark friend the way you claim, why would he do that? Loghain met his stare levelly. Because he couldn't stop it. From what I've heard, even in the beginning, there were men who could travel who weren't his toad-eaters, and he had no excuse to do all the recruiting himself. But he's made a tower of his own, hidden inside the Black Tower, and the men in it are loyal to him, not you. He amended the deserters list and sends his apologies for an honest mistake, but you can wager all you own it was no mistake. And how loyal was Loghain? If one false dragon chafed at following the dragon reborn, why not another? He might think he had cause. He had been far more famous as a false dragon than Taim, more successful, gathering an army that swept out of Gil'dan, and nearly reached Lugard on its way to Tyr. Half the known world had trembled at the name Loghain. Yet Mazrim Taim commanded the Black Tower, while Loghain Ablar was only another Ashaman. Min still saw an aura of glory around him. Just how that glory was to be achieved was beyond her viewing, however. He took the pipe from his mouth, and the bowl was hot against the heron branded into his palm. He must have been puffing away furiously without being aware of it. The trouble was, Taim and Loghain were lesser problems. They had to wait. The tools at hand. He made an effort to keep his voice even. Taim took their names off the list. That's the important thing. If he's showing favoritism, I'll put an end to it when I have time. But the Seanchan have to come first. And maybe Tarmon Gaiden, too.
If, Loghain growled, slamming his cup down on the table so hard that it broke.
Wine spread across the tabletop and dripped over the edge. Scowling, he wiped his damp hand on his coat.
Do you think I'm imagining things?
His tone grew more heated by the word.
Or making them up? Do you think this is jealousy, Althor? Is that what you think?
You listen to me,
Rand began, raising his voice against a peal of thunder.
I told you I expected you and your friends in black coats to be civil to me, my friends, and my guests,
Cad Swain said sternly.
But I've decided that must be expanded to include each other.
Her head was still bent over her embroidery hoop, but she spoke as if she were shaking a finger under their noses.
At least when I am present. That means if you continue squabbling, I may have to spank both of you.
Harlan and Anila began laughing so hard they got the string of their game in a snarl. Nynaeve laughed too, though she tried to hide it behind her hand. Light even Min smiled. Loghain bristled, jaw tightening until Rand thought he should hear the man's teeth grating. He was trying hard not to bristle himself. Cad Swain and her bloody rules. Her conditions for becoming his advisor. She pretended that he had asked for them, and every so often she added another to her list. The rules were not precisely onerous, though their existence was, but her way of presenting them was always like a poke with a sharp stick. He opened his mouth to tell her he was finished with her rules, and with her too, if need be.
Taim very likely will have to wait on the last battle, whatever he's about, Varen said suddenly.
Her knitting, a shapeless lump that might have been anything, sat in her lap.
It will come soon. According to everything I've read on the subject, the signs are quite clear. Half the servants have recognized dead people in the halls, people they knew alive. It's happened often enough that they aren't frightened by it any longer. And a dozen men moving the cattle to spring pasture watched a considerable town melt into mist just a few miles to the north.
Cad Swain had raised her head and was staring at the stout brown sister.
Thank you for repeating what you told us yesterday, Varen, she said dryly.
Varen blinked, then took up her knitting again, frowning at it as though she too were unsure what it was going to be. Min caught Rand's eyes, shaking her head slowly, and he sighed. The bond held irritation and wariness, the last deliberate warning to him, he suspected. At times, she seemed to be able to read his mind. Well, if he needed Cad Swain, and Min said he did, then he needed her. He just wished he knew what she was supposed to teach him aside from how to grind his teeth.
"Advise me, Cad Swain. What do you think of my plan?"
"At last the boy asks," she murmured, setting her embroidery down beside her sewing basket. "All his schemes in motion, some I've not been made privy to, and now he asks. Very well. Your peace with the Seanchan will be unpopular."
"A truce," he broke in, "and a truce with the Dragon Reborn will last only as long as the Dragon Reborn. When I die, everyone will be free to go to war with the Seanchan again if they wish."
Min slammed her book shut and folded her arms beneath her breasts.
"Don't you talk that way," she said, red-faced with anger.
The bond also carried fear.
"The prophecies, Min," he said sadly.
not sad for himself, but for her. He wanted to protect her, her and Elaine and Avienda, but he would hurt them in the end.
"I said you don't talk that way. The prophecies don't say you have to die. I'm not going to let you die, Randall Thor. Elaine and Avienda and I won't let you."
She glared at Olivia, who her viewing had said would help Rand die, and her hands slid down her arms toward her cuffs.
"Behave, men," he said. Her hands shot away from her cuffs, but she set her jaw, and the bond suddenly was flooded with stubbornness. Light was he going to have to worry about men trying to kill Olivia? Not that she was likely to succeed, as well try throwing a knife at an Aes Sedai as at the Seanchan woman, but she might get herself injured. He was not sure Olivia knew any weaves but those for weapons.
"Unpopular, as I say," Cadswain said firmly, raising her voice.
She favored men with a brief frown before turning her attention back to Rand. Her face was smooth, composed, an Aes Sedai's face. Her dark eyes were hard, like polished black stones.
"Especially in Terraban, Amadicia, and Altara, but also elsewhere. If you agree to allow the Seanchan to keep what they've already taken, what lands will you give away next? That is how most rulers will see matters."
Rand dropped back into his chair, stretching his legs in front of him and crossing his ankles.
"It doesn't matter how unpopular it is. I went through that doorframe Tirangrial in Tyr, Cadswain.
You know about that?" Golden ornaments bobbled as she nodded impatiently.
"One of my questions for the Aelfin was, how can I win the last battle?"
"A dangerous question to pose," she said quietly, touching on the shadow as it does. "Supposedly the results can be quite unpleasant. What was the answer?"
"The north and the east must be as one. The west and the south must be as one. The two must be as one."
He blew a smoke ring, put another in the middle of it as it expanded. That was not the whole of it. He had asked how to win and survive. The last part of his answer had been, "To live, you must die." Not something he was going to bring up in front of Min anytime soon. In front of anyone except Olivia, for that matter. Now he just had to figure out how to live by dying. "At first I thought it meant I had to conquer everywhere, but that wasn't what they said. What if it means the Seanchan hold the west and south, as you could say they already do, and there's an alliance to fight the last battle, the Seanchan with everybody else?"
"It's possible," she allowed. "But if you're going to make this truce, why are you moving what seems to be a considerable army to Arad-Daman and reinforcing what is already in Ilion?"
"Because Tommen Gaiden is coming, Cadswain, and I can't fight the Shadow and the Seanchan at the same time. I'll have a truce or I'll crush them, whatever the cost. The prophecies say I have to bind the Nine Moons to me. I only understood what that meant a few days ago. As soon as Bashir returns, I'll know when and where I'm to meet the Daughter of the Nine Moons. The only question now is how do I bind her, and she'll have to answer that."
He spoke matter-of-factly, now and then blowing a smoke ring for punctuation. Reactions varied. Loyal just wrote very fast, trying to capture every word, while Harilyn and Anila went on with their game. If the spears had to be danced, they were ready. Olivia nodded fiercely, doubtless hoping it would come to crushing those who had kept her wearing Edam for 500 years. Loghain had found another wine cup and filled it with the last of what was in the pitcher, but he merely held the cup rather than drinking, his expression unreadable. Now it was Rand whom Varen studied intently, but then she had always been curious about him. But why in the light would Min feel bone-deep sadness? And Cadswain?
"Stone cracks from a hard enough blow," she said, her face an Aes Sedai mask of calm. "Steel shatters. The oak fights the wind and breaks. The willow bends where it must and survives."
"A willow won't win Tommen Gaiden," he told her.
The door creaked open again, and Ethan tottered in.
"My lord dragon, 3 Ogier have arrived,
They were most pleased to learn that Master Loyal is here. One of them is his mother.
My mother?
Loyal squeaked, and even that sounded like a hollow wind gusting in caverns. He leaped up so fast that his chair fell over backwards, wringing his hands, ears wilting. His head swung from side to side as if he were hunting for a way out besides the door.
What am I going to do, Rand? The other two must be Elder Hammond and Aerith. What am I going to do?
Mistress Coverell said she was most anxious to speak with you, Master Loyal, Ethan said in that creaky voice. Most anxious. They are all damp from the rain, but she said they will wait for you in the Ogier sitting room upstairs.
What am I going to do, Rand?
You said you want to marry Aerith, Rand said as gently as he could. Gentleness was difficult except with men.
But my book... My notes aren't complete, and I'll never find out what happens next. Aerith will take me back to studying Tsofu with her.
Fah! Cadswain picked up her embroidery again and began working the needle delicately. She was making the ancient symbol of Aes Sedai. The dragon's fang and the flame of Tarvalin melded into a disk, black and white separated by a sinuous line.
Go to your mother, Loyal. If she's Coverill, daughter of Ella, daughter of Sung... You don't want to keep her waiting. As I expect, you know.
Loyal seemed to take Cadswain's words as a command. He began wiping his pen nib again, capping his ink jar. But he did everything very slowly, with his ears drooping. Every so often he moaned sadly, half under his breath,
My book.
Well, Baron said, holding up her knitting for inspection, I believe I have done all that I can here. I think I'll go find Tomas. The rain makes his knee ache, though he denies it even to me.
She glanced at the window.
It does seem to be slowing.
And I think I'll go find Lan, Nynaeve said, gathering her skirts. The company is better where he is.
That with a sharp tug on her braid and a glare divided between Olivia and Loghain.
The wind tells me a storm is coming, Rand. And you know I don't mean rain.
The last battle? Rand asked. How soon?
When it came to weather, listening to the wind could sometimes tell her when the rains would come to the hour.
It may be, and I don't know. Just remember, a storm is coming. A terrible storm.
Overhead, thunder rolled.